Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. And you can join Pomp and Joe on Wednesday, March 19th, as they broadcast baseball card castle in Cranberry for our special Giant Eagle Feed the Need broadcast. You'll be able to call to bid on special items with proceeds going to the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. You also support now by texting NEED to 50155. All the details at 937thefan.com. Let's grab some calls, 412-928-9370. We've been talking about these comments from Cam Hayward today, essentially saying, you know what, don't really need Russell Wilson. That's kind of the gist, I think. Or I'm sorry, don't really need Aaron Rodgers. That's kind of the gist of what we got from Cam today, essentially saying, you know what, if you want to be a Pittsburgh Steeler, come be a Pittsburgh Steeler. But he's not really sweating it either way. Let's go to Bob in Green Tree next on the Fan. Hi, Bob.
How you doing today?
Good.
So here's the thing. What you have to ask yourself is very basically this. If you have Rudolph starting, say, and we go 5-12.
Yep.
Okay. Outside of your weekly aggravation and want to kick the dog, all right, and you bring Rodgers in and we go 12-5 and we get to the playoffs and we lose first round. Is there any difference there in the grand scheme of things?
Well,
in your
I don't in that situation, no. But I think in what I'm saying here is this, and I agree with you on that. I don't think Aaron Rodgers puts them over the top and it makes them a contender in the AFC. But my point in this has been, if you're Cam Hayward, you should be thinking Aaron Rodgers gives us a better chance maybe to win. I don't think it's going to happen, but I know that he gives you a better chance to accomplish that more than Mason Rudolph does. And he's probably the best option out there for you to bring in. And Mason Rudolph just isn't going to get you to that point. So from an organizational standpoint, I agree with you. I think Mason Rudolph gives you a less chance to win. I actually think Mason Rudolph is probably better than five wins, though. If you really wanted to tank, I would go with an even worse quarterback, but they're not going to do that. I agree with you. And you're right. In the grand scheme of things, is losing in the first round all that different than five wins? Not really, but it's a tough situation to be in regardless.
But the parlay on that for what Cam was saying, and I think is the part that no one's talking about, and why I say lose in the first round, I don't, if we brought in whoever, Jesus, to play quarterback, right, and we win 16 games, this defense, and I know we added some pieces, they are not built to beat anybody in the playoffs. They're just not. And I hate to say that, Cam, great guy, been a great Steeler. But who are we stopping in the playoffs? That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I was going with, in the grand scheme of things, what does it matter? Everyone wants to talk about the quarterback this, quarterback that. What about the defense who's overpaid, a ton of money going out, and they're sorry. They don't stop anybody when in the playoffs. I mean, and that includes Mr. Watt, too. You know, I mean, I know it's not popular to say here, but that's
oh no, you're right on that. I mean, the guy completely no-showed the last couple of games of the season this year, and I know he was hurt, but it's not like it's the first time that he's come up very, very small in a very big game. It's happened throughout his career.
Exactly, I know. And then take an even crazier perspective on it is if I could deal Watt for a two this year, and even a two or three next year, I would do it. Absolutely would do it.
I think I would need more than that, Bob, and appreciate the call. I would need more than that for Watt right now. I would need to at least get a first back because I think you still have a guy right now that is a continual candidate, at least for the next 2 years, to be the best defensive player in football. And you don't give that up for a second-round pick. Guys like George Pickens, maybe you give up for a second-round pick. But guys who are of the very, very, very elite and at a position of pretty significant, pretty big significance in the NFL picture and a pass rusher, you don't give that up for a second-round pick. But I am with you in that if somebody came along and they made me a good offer, a really good offer, yeah, I mean, I'm I think that's the best way to reset your franchise in a hurry is to go get rid of somebody like that who's probably at best going to give you two more good years, but there are 2 years coming up where you don't have the quarterback to go win a championship. You're not going to have the quarterback in the next 2 years to go win a championship, at least not yet, even if they do draft a guy in 26. Jim in Monroeville next on the Fan. Hi, Jim.
Thanks for taking my call. I think we're all missing something here, and the fact that, you know, we should be asking for Russell Wilson to come back to Pittsburgh. And I say this for a few reasons. I want to start first. You know, Justin Fields played the first six games of the year, went 4-2. Didn't do great, but I think if Russ Wilson was healthy and started those first six games, maybe 5-1. I don't know about 6-0, but, you know, 5-1, so that's a game difference. The offensive line was in shambles all year. The ground game was never really consistent enough to bluff a defense. And so when you look at that and you ask questions like, well, what if George Pickens goes down? We saw what happens when George Pickens goes down to the offense. So I don't want to hold all that against Russ Wilson. Well, you have this season, you have DK Metcalf and George Pickens. So the question is, what happens if Pickens goes down? We still have DK Metcalf. So this is a different team. We're going to see a change to the offensive line, obviously, with left tackle and right tackle. Faltuano on the right, Jones on the left. So, I mean, we have to keep our fingers crossed. He's a first-round talent. So, I mean, I guess the hope is they're going to be able to block, pass block better than they did last year. So I think the answer is bring back the guy who did play well, who we were 10-3.
Yeah.
It's a matter of, you know, if these rumors are true about him and Smith butting heads, Tomlin has to step in there and make this work. You can't allow an offensive coordinator and a quarterback with Russell Wilson's talents butt heads to the point that the team doesn't win. You know, last year wasn't a fluke. Well, think about this year. Again, it's DK Metcalf and Pickens. That's a huge difference on offense. And I think former weapon at Seattle for Russ, come on. I mean, I think the obvious, you know, as the sun is outside right now, you know, Russell Wilson should be playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, look, Jim, thanks for the call. I'll say this to that. If it's not going to work out with Rodgers and your hope is to win this year, Russell Wilson still gives you a better chance in my eyes than Mason Rudolph. And I would go get Russ then. The question that I have with all of that right now is, can they coexist? And does Russ want to come back to a franchise that let him walk out the door, that said, well, we'd rather deal with Justin Fields first, because we know now that they negotiated with Fields, he just got a better offer. They wanted the guy that Wilson replaced. They wanted then Rodgers after that, a guy who's on the fence about even playing football anymore. How do you make that work mentally if you're Russell Wilson? Look, they're professionals. He's getting paid, etc. But, man, I mean, you're going back to a place that essentially said multiple times over, we don't really want you around here anymore. We've heard the term, toxic positivity about Russell Wilson a lot, and I think that there is something to that. You know, there was that last game of the year, Cam Hayward walking off the field, and Russ comes up, and Cam's like sick as a dog. He's got the flu, and Russ hugs him and gets in his face. Not a good idea for the starting quarterback to go get in the face of somebody who has the flu, but that's neither here nor there. But he gets in his face. He's like, come on, let's go win four. Come on. And you can tell Cam is just like, dude, get out of my face. And I don't want to knock a guy for being too positive, but it does kind of feel like Russell Wilson, a couple of times over here, has quickly overstayed his welcome. And I don't know that there's any coming back after that for him. Let's go to Pete in the South Hills next on the Fan. Hi, Pete.
Hey, Josh. Real quick, I think the one caller talking about TJ Watt being traded for a couple of second-round picks, I don't necessarily think that's a terrible idea, because when I look at the four best defensive ends, edge rushers, you know, Myles Garrett, Hendrickson in Cincinnati, Max Crosby, and TJ Watt, they were all really great players, but they had a terrible offense. So what did they really do in terms of impacting their team to get them over the hump. And I also think whenever you look at the two teams that were in the Super Bowl had two of the best defensive tackles. So I think the NFL, for whatever reason, is over-glorifying the edge rusher position, when realistically I'd rather focus on finding a dominant defensive tackle than paying $35, $40 million for these guys who, at times, quarterbacks these days are easier to scramble or get out of the pocket because they are much faster than those guys, or they can step up in the pocket and deliver just beautiful balls down the field. You know, guys like a Mahomes, guys like a Josh Allen. So as much as I love T.J. Watt and appreciate what he's done for the Steelers, one of my favorite Steelers of all time, it just gets to a point, I think, where the NFL is, you know, it's always a sexy position because they get the stats, right? They get the 17 sacks a year. But how important is that to a team's success in 2025?
I agree with what you said there, Pete. Thanks for the call. I agree in that I'm not paying T.J. Watt $35, $40 million a year like what Myles Garrett got. Just because the Browns do something stupid, and they do a lot of things stupid, you don't need to do that too. The problem is, look, you know how this works. The market is the market. And I think it's very obvious that with T.J. Watt, you have a guy who thinks that he's better than Myles Garrett. And because of that, I think he's going to want to get paid at least as well, if not better, than Myles Garrett. I'm not paying him that. I'm not really getting all that close to it. Myles Garrett's making, what, 40 a year? Is that what the number came in at? I'm not getting close to that. I'm not even sure I'd want to throw 30 at T.J. Watt. And look, caps go up and there's room to work and things like that, but he is right in that in this day and age of the NFL, I think that you're better off kind of spreading out your wealth defensively. You're better off being solid at every position instead of spectacular at one and, you know, maybe below average at some others. And I think you could say that of the Steelers this year. You know, they have a great pass rusher, but what does that matter if your corners are not good or your safety can't take the football away? It's a problem. And it's one that I don't think you solve it by throwing a bunch of money at T.J. Watt. And if you want to help, and what we've talked about here through the first part of the show, if you want to help with that quarterback conundrum, it's not going to happen this year. And maybe we are flawed in that we are operating in a world where the Steelers can go get a quarterback this year and be good this year, and maybe that's just not the case. But it can certainly, a move like that would certainly speed up your ability to go get a quarterback next year. Whether that comes via the draft, whether it comes via free agency, what have you, a trade, it gives you a better opportunity to do bigger, splashier things next year if you make a move like that. The issue is, it just feels like the Steelers are not going to do something like that with T.J. Watt. They'll give him an extension. It'll be too much money. Very likely, and I hate saying this, but very likely he's going to miss a season with an injury coming up. I don't want to say that. I don't want that to happen. I hope that it doesn't. I don't like putting that out there into the ethos, if you will. But let's be real here. The guy has had his bumps. He's had his bruises. He's been shut down before with injury. And given the nature at which he plays, given the intensity at which he plays, I think it's probably a respectable chance that you're going to lose him at some point here over the next couple of years for a very, very large chunk of time during a season. It just seems unavoidable. It's kind of like a young pitcher who throws a bunch of innings, and you're like, well, this is great, but in the back of your mind, you know what's coming. It's that old TJ word. I don't want to even think about that with the guy that we're all thinking about, I'm sure, here in Pittsburgh. But you get what I'm saying. I don't know how else you facilitate this thing happening faster, because the organization is seemingly stuck. The Steelers are seemingly at a point here where they almost need something to go very, very bad and a season to go very, very wrong, because they're doing all they can to ensure that doesn't happen. It's like you need that breakthrough. You almost, it's like needing a miracle almost, and that miracle is them sucking for a year. It's so weird to talk about it that way, but that's kind of what it is. I don't know where they turn.
It might be the kind of deal where maybe they need to take one step back in their franchise to take multiple steps forward.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you have to take two steps back to take a massive leap forward. You know, I'm with you. And people don't want to talk about that because people don't want to live in a world, because they haven't lived in a world where the Steelers are like that, where the Steelers operate and look like a lot of other NFL teams, in that you have a couple of bad years, then you find your guy, and you make it work, and you're good, and you're successful, and you build your organization back up for the next 8, 9, 10 years, and then you do it all over again. It's very, very hard to seamlessly transition from one good era to the next. If you recall, the Steelers kind of toiled around in this world for a long time post Terry Bradshaw. Do we want that again? Like, do you want another 15-year run, 20-year run of trying to figure out what the quarterback position is for the Pittsburgh Steelers? I don't. And I think the world that you're living in right now, and I would even throw to all the people that are saying, Mason, Mason, Mason. Look, I agree that Mason gives them a chance right now. Mason gives them the opportunity to win 9, 10 games, maybe get in the playoffs. I think that's the highest of the high ends for Mason Rudolph. The reality is that he's probably going to win you 8 games, 9 games, if their defense is solid, and you're going to be blown out in the first round of the playoffs, and to put you back right where you were. So what do you do? I don't know. And I don't think they know. And I'm speaking through all of this, and there's so many people who are so strongly opinionated. They need Mason. They need Russ. They need Aaron Rodgers. They need this guy, that guy. They need this quarterback. Shedeur Sanders, if you're a true sicko out there who thinks that. There's so many people that feel so strongly and passionate about this. But realistically, I think I'm representing, not to beat my own chest here, I'm representing the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. And I'm representing how I think the collective of the fan base feels. I'm representing, I believe, what Omar Khan and Art Rooney and Mike Tomlin and Andy Weidel, etc., are sort of feeling as well. In that, I don't really know what the hell to do. I don't know what's right here. I don't know how to get out of this. I know that's a weird take to have, but I think that that's the opinion that the Steelers have right now. And that's what it looks like, right? They don't know what to do here. It's bizarre. 50-minute mark on the Fan, which I conveniently missed during the 6 o'clock hour. That was brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge. Route 19 in Peters Township. And the Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We'll come back with a short segment. Then Alex Stumpf will join us from MLB.com. He's been down in Bradenton. Well, we had nice weather here today, but generally nicer weather than what we've had here in Pittsburgh. So he'll join us to talk a little Pirates coming up in a bit as well. But we'll take more of your calls after this, 412-928-9370. That's where you can reach us. This is Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Oh, yeah, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. This is just such a great jam. Every time we come in with this music bed, just slaps. Absolutely slaps. We have Alex Stumpf joining us in about 10 minutes here on The Fan to go over what is going on down in Bradenton. Very curious to get caught up with Alex. And I also want to talk later on in the show, perhaps, about the new food items coming to PNC Park. We have a lot to get to in the show tonight. We've been talking a lot about Cam Hayward and Aaron Rodgers and maybe a little beef going on there, which I find interesting. But we will get into some other topics as we go throughout the show, including West Virginia, West Virginia getting left out of the NCAA tournament, and then their coach, well, he says sayonara, and he's going to Indiana. Tough couple of days if you're a Mountaineer. Not great. Crowley, we heard Crowley call in on the PM team earlier, and it's always so interesting to me when you hear a guy host and then you hear him call in. There's just a different voice, and you coupled that with, it's not a different voice, it's just a different tone. You couple that with maybe, you know, a little bit of hoarseness because Crowley has been very, very upset, I'm guessing, over the last couple of days. And I don't know, perhaps tears were shed. Boy, just tough to be a Mountaineer. I don't know where they turn next. Do you think that they give Huggins a call?
I just don't know about, like, the proximity. Maybe if this was, you know, if they had another coaching change in, I don't know, another year or two. I just wonder about the proximity from the recent incident.
Yeah, it would be tough to justify beyond simply saying, we want to win basketball games. I mean, there's no way around it. You bring that guy back, you're saying we want to win basketball games. And we don't really care that he said some disparaging things on a radio show. We don't care that he got, you know, pulled over driving under the influence. And it wasn't the first time that it had happened. And he was doing it around a concert venue full of young children. That would be a tough look. It would have been a tough look had they kept him. And I don't think they get any sort of reprieve here from me, nor should they from anybody else, if they decide to bring him back. I think they'll go elsewhere. I think they'll look elsewhere. But tough situation. You know, this is as well, and I know a thing or two about women's basketball. This is the second time this has happened to West Virginia in 3 years. Their women's coach, one and done. A couple of years ago, Dawn Plitzelwhite, I believe was her last name. She was at, I think, South Dakota, and then came to West Virginia 1 year, went to Minnesota. And now you see Darren DeVries comes in 1 year, boom, gone. Mid-major West Virginia, better job 1 year. Of course, here locally, like, we call that pulling a Todd Graham. I don't know if there was any high octane down there in Morgantown this year, though they certainly were knocking on the door. And I do want to bring that up a little bit later in the show, the NCAA tournament getting started. In fact, it's going on right now. St. Francis with a narrow lead at halftime, I do believe. And, yeah, it's tough situation, certainly, for the Mountaineers, looking at their third coach in 3 years. And you know that the fan base, the Twitter folk, will loudly, loudly be screaming for Bob Huggins. You know that they will.
A changing of the guard for both men's basketball and football next season,
yeah,
for WVU. Although, of course, a semi-changing of the guard for football, I guess.
Yeah.
It being a second
stint for
Ridgeron.
Wouldn't it be interesting, though, if they brought back probably the two most beloved coaches there of our lifetime?
That's right.
In both basketball and...
about that
and football, if they brought back Rich Rod and then they brought back Huggins, like just running it back with the guys that people love down there, it would be, I mean, obviously they left, each of them, for very different reasons. Rich Rod left for a better job. Huggins left, well, we know why, But that's a, I don't know. It's not a bad job at all in the basketball side. But, man, that's third coach in 3 years. You got to hit the reset button. And DeVries, you know, they got smacked by Pitt earlier in the year. And they did a really good job at sort of bouncing back from what I thought was going to be a truly terrible team. He did a heck of a job there. That's why he's going to Indiana. I think they're going to be end up being really good. Mike Woodson was there. I never really was all that impressed with Mike Woodson there. I thought, you have a giant. Why are they not a giant? You know, Indiana. It's Indiana basketball. They should be a giant. And he had one there, and they were just never really were. They were okay a couple of times. I think DeVries probably goes there and he fully resurrects that giant. All right, we got to get to a break. Alex Stumpf will join us on the other side. And we'll talk a little Pirates baseball to close out the hour. That's when we come back. Alex Stumpf of MLB.com joins us next. I'm Josh Rountree. This is the Fan Evening Show. It's almost that time for us to feed the need with the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank on March 25th, our Giant Eagle Feed the Need Radiothon. We'll be raising money to provide meals for our neighbors in need. Text NEED, N-E-E-D, to 50155, or go to the Metropolitan Window Company online donation center, and your donation will provide meals locally. Brought to you by Aetna, Isley's, Beano's, and Greater Pittsburgh Auto Dealers. All the details at 937thefan.com. And next, on the Fan Hotline, which is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We welcome in from MLB.com, Alex Stumpf. Alex, how are things down Florida way? How's the weather? And how's the baseball been?
Oh, weather's been fine. I mean, I hear too, but it's hard to argue with, you know, 70-something every day down here and sunny.
Yeah.
And the baseball, not a lot of complaints at the moment, I guess you could say. More wins than losses in spring.
We will hold our complaints for at least the next couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Whenever the games count. Yeah.
Right, that's when the complaints can begin. Very curious to talk to you, obviously for the first time here as we get set to start a new Pirates season, Alex. First things first, the rotation opening day. I know one guy certainly that's going to be in it by the name of Paul Skeens, and Mitch Keller, Jared Jones seem like locks as well. How will the rest of the rotation look? And what are, I guess, and this is sort of a broad question, but I'll let you run with it. What is a realistic expectation for how that rotation should stack up, you know, against the rest of baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I think the last two slots are going to be Andrew Heaney and Bailey Falter. Heaney signed to be a starter. He's got a good track record. He is the veteran, pretty much average major league starter that if he's your number four, you're in a really good spot. And Bailey Falter, you know, showed last year some really good stuff, showed that he belongs in a major league rotation too. And I think whenever you take that, you've got one of the better rotations in baseball. Now, there are some variance that needs to go through. I mean, I think we could all expect Paul Skeens to once again be one of the best arms, if not the best pitcher in baseball this year. But Mitch Keller, I think what he circled in last year, you know, what he, that second half struggle, especially against left-handers, the lessons that he took from it, I think were kind of profound in what he probably needed to go through, like developing a proper changeup, not just relying on the cutter. I think that'll make a big difference over the course of the season. Jared Jones is someone who I think, whether it's the two-seamer, whether it's the curveball changeup, there are going to be ways to add to his pitch mix so he's not just going to be so four-seamer slider heavy. I think there's upside in here that this could be one of the best rotations of baseball, you know, with teams like the Dodgers, with teams like the Mariners, the Phillies. I think they have that potential. But I also think whenever you have someone like Paul Skeens, you've got a very high floor with this group. Like, worst case scenario, this is, I think, like a top 10 rotation of baseball.
We're talking with Alex Stumpf here at MLB.com. Alex, you mentioned Skeens, obviously, and what he does, I think, for the entirety of the team and the rotation. What has he done on his own to add to his arsenal, to refine himself. These guys are always working. Nobody's right a finished product, especially at his age. But what has he done here in the last several months to maybe take even potentially another farther step, as crazy as that might seem for a guy who's already so dominant?
I mean, I think you just touched on that. He's always working. He's always tinkering. He's always looking for something new. And that, you know, curiosity, that tinkering led to the splinker last year, which obviously was one of the best pitches in baseball. He has a new cutter and a new sinker. And just doing a bit of a data dive on the sinker, you know, the little bit that we saw, especially in that last start, it looks like something that could really complement the rest of the, you know, pitch arsenal in general. He's talked about needing to be more efficient to really, if you're falling behind, if you have to throw like 40 pitches over two innings, like, okay, I need a couple 1-2 pitch outs. That's something that you can lean on a little bit. It moves a little different than the splinker, a little different than the fastball, so it's a different way to jam hitters inside if you're right-handed. So I think that type of pitch is just going to help flourish, you know, the whole arsenal. And then the cutter, like he said, he didn't really have a breaking ball that was like at that 90-mile-per-hour range. Well, now he does. Did he need it? You could argue no, but, you know, it's just one of those embarrassment of riches. And if you can do it, why not experiment with it?
Yeah, it's amazing. The guy keeps finding ways to get even more dangerous out there. Do you get a sense, and, you know, I go back to obviously really the only time in my lifetime, and I believe yours as well, where the Pirates were, you know, a winning team, and they had Andrew McCutchen kind of as the centerpiece. I think guys really sort of looked to him. You could tell the team was, I don't know if it's fair to say built around a guy, because that's kind of hard to do in baseball. But certainly he was the focal point, and I think everybody realized that and acknowledged that. And he was, I guess, kind of the heartbeat of that team as it went for those 3 years. And there were other important pieces as well. But do you get the sense that this team views Paul Skenes in a very similar manner? And then on top of that, what is his reaction and what is his personality in being that guy for this team?
Talk to Mitch Keller. This is before they signed Andrew Heaney. And I said, hey, you're the old guy in the rotation now. You know, does that put more on you? You know, you got to be a staff leader. And he's like, I'm not the only leader here. Paul's the leader. You know, and he said like Jared and Bailey and guys who've been there for a while, but like he emphasized Paul. And I think that kind of sticks out because he's just 22 years old, but people recognize like this isn't just, you know, a 22-year-old player right here. This is already one of the best players in this game. And if he has a really good season, there's a pretty good chance the Pirates are going to have a pretty good season too. So I think he recognizes it. I don't know if he'll ever vocalize, you know, something along the lines of that, but you know, it's just small things. You know, it's like he's going around the clubhouse a little more, you know, just talking to players, nothing, you know, baseball stuff. It could just be BSing. So I think that type of stuff just looks.
Oh, we might have lost Alex.
All that uncomfortable last year.
All right, there he is. Alex, we're kind of losing you there. You're cutting out a bit on us. Maybe some cell service things going on, but I think we got you back now. I do want to ask you about David Bednar and kind of where he's at right now. You look at the numbers in spring training, 7 appearances, 6 innings, and an ERA sitting at 12. He certainly struggled last year. That ERA crept up near 6. Where are things at right now with Bednar, and how in flux is the closer position for the Pirates as we near opening day?
Well, hopefully Florida's cell towers can help me out here the rest of the way. Sorry about that.
You're good.
Yeah, Derek Shelton, you know, won't flat out say that, you know, Bednar is the closer, but I fully expect that if they have a lead in the 9th inning on opening day, you're going to see David Bednar come out to pitch. It's a big year for him. I really like how the curveball has looked, how that pitch has come along. He's talked about, you know, looking at how his pitch this offseason, spending time looking at how his pitches move, the way that they're supposed to move, just really doing a deep dive. I think he did zero in on some things that he needed to do. Also, as I think everyone has written, he's in better shape right now. He made that commitment to his body on top. He recognizes this is a big year. He recognizes that there's a lot of pressure on him to close out those games, whether or not he's officially a closer. The bullpen needs, you know, the 2022-2023 David Bednar back there again. But yeah, it's a big year for him. There are a couple other guys that if Bednar, you know, he struggles or gets hurt or whatever, like Kolderman and Dennis Santana in particular, that I think could be leverage arms also. But I would expect Bednar to be the ninth inning guy this year.
Alex, Andy Rodriguez, I'm curious how he's looked coming off, you know, a lengthy injury and a serious injury. How has Andy looked, and where does he fit into the equation right now? Is first base going to be an option for him potentially? Is he just slotted right now as backup catcher or in a battle for backup catcher? How is that going to play out with a guy who was obviously a real bright spot, you thought, for this team before the injury?
Yeah, and to answer the first base question first, they want him to stick a catcher coming back from the elbow injury. They don't want to, you know, mess with that. They want him to just focus as a catcher right now, not closing the door in the future, but coming back from the injury is what it is. I think the at-bats he's had this spring have been really good, like especially of late. Maybe he got off a little slow. I mean, that's understandable after barely playing last year. But now that he's gotten into the rhythm, he looks a lot more comfortable. He looks a lot, you know, more confident up there. The results are speaking for themselves. I think his OPS is over 1,000 at the moment. So he's crushing the ball right now. But so is Henry Davis, who is, you know, hitting the ball to all fields. And it's a battle between those two right now to see who's going to be the second catcher. I think we're going to see them both play a lot, you know, this last week to get that last look. And I wonder if this is going to come down to Andy just missed a whole year. He needs every day at bats. Can he get that up in the majors? Whatever, Joey Bart is coming off of that great year last year and has looked outstanding this spring also.
It makes for an interesting scenario, and you don't hate to have too much of a good thing, I suppose, but long term, I mean, how you can't have three catchers, and especially guys, a couple of them being younger, you know, if they are playing well, you want them to be in the lineup longer term throughout the course of the season. How do you see that perhaps shaking out if those three guys are all performing pretty well? Like, what do the Pirates do at that point if they sort of have three options of guys who can all catch?
If all three of those guys just really pan out, they are all good hitters, my guess would be one of them gets traded. I wouldn't hazard a guess which one, but it's just like you said, that's an embarrassment of riches at some point. There's no reason to keep one at Triple-A. And maybe you can put someone at like a first base if Spencer Horwitz doesn't work out. But if Spencer Horwitz, you know, proves to be a major league hitter and they gave up a lot for him, they think very highly of him, there really isn't a whole lot of places you can play him. So I would guess a trade at some point would be on the table. But that's A, it pans out for everyone, and B, we're talking 2026, 2027.
Well, speaking of first base, with Horwitz on the shelf for the time being, where do they go in that regard? Who has emerged at the first base position here? Has anybody emerged at first base? And when they run him out there for opening day here in a couple of weeks, what's that going to look like over there on the corner at first base?
I'm really looking at Jared Triolo and DJ Stewart right now. DJ Stewart is the non-roster player, so he would have to be added to the 40-man. Triolo is going to make the opening day team. He's going to get at-bats everywhere. It would just be there is an opening for the short term there. Horwitz is hitting off a tee. He's progressing. I don't think he's going to be gone all that terribly long. Like, you can't, you know, obviously have him ready to go in early April because he hasn't gotten into game situations yet. He needs to get a little bit of that rust, get his timing down. So it's going to be a little bit of time. But whenever he comes back, it's, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to just put Triolo back into the utility man role? He showed last year that he could do that really well. DJ Stewart could also be a good fourth outfielder potentially. So they have some options. I'm looking at those two as like a short-term solution, though.
Alex, last thing for you. You've obviously been down there now in Florida. You've watched the practices. You've watched the games and spring training. The guy who has maybe opened the most eyes, who has been the pleasant surprise of spring training for the Pirates, has been who?
You know what? It might be Connor Griffin, who, you know, has been optioned and, you know, or reassigned, not on the roster yet. Never had a chance to. But, you know, for an 18-year-old kid facing double-A, triple-A pitching, he was hitting the ball hard. He was making some really nice plays in the field. It was one of those, this kid's 18, in tight moments. Like, could he reach the majors before he gets a legal drink? He's really played well so far down here, even if it has been mostly late in innings against those double-A, triple-A guys. But you know what? If you haven't played a professional game yet and you are taking a triple-A pitcher behind the woodshed, that says a lot. So, yeah, he's not going to be up at 25 or 26, but he kind of opened my eyes a little bit of like,